following Islamic laws or even for choosing the religion of Islam. And that is why, Allah's expectations from him are much more compared to the person who is living in a very different environment. And his duties and responsibilities are more. So my point is that a person who is born into a non-Muslim family, for example, a corrupt one, for sure Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is going to task him based on his or her capacity. لا يكلف الله نفسا إلا وسعها. This is the principle. So we shouldn't think that Allah in the Day of Judgment will judge that person in a very bad environment, in a corrupt family, like the person who is born into a very righteous family. No, the cases are different. And Allah's judgment for sure is going to be different based on the conditions and situation of these two people. And the other point is that the first point that I share, I don't want to negate that these elements do not have any effect. For sure, all these elements play a role, but to some extent, okay? So the family that we are born into, they play a role.
Very important role, that's right.
The friends, the colleagues, the school that we are sent to. Imagine one family sends their child to the best school possible, I mean, religiously speaking, and the other one sends him or her to a different school. For sure, the effects are different.
That's right.
So the neighborhood, the region, the country, and so on and so forth. So all these issues, they play a role, but to some extent. And to that extent, people are forgiven by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
IRIB English Radio presents Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Answering your theological questions in Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Send us your questions to EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
But the point is that I don't think that we have a case in which there is no room left for free will. So we hardly can think of a person who can claim that I was forced by all these elements to follow this path and I didn't have any other choice. So I'm corrupt because my family were corrupt. I didn't have any other choice. Yes, if he is telling the truth, if really he is what we call it, majbur, mustar, he is,
yes,
or she is forced, then absolutely they are forgiven by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala because they didn't have any free will. But practically speaking, hardly we can think of such a person.
Yes.
At the end of the day, 10% can be given to our free will, or 20%, 30%.
Yes.
Depending on different people. So all these elements play a role: the family, neighborhood, the school, colleagues, friend, each and every one of them play the role to some extent. But some percentage should be given to our free will as well. So at the end of the day, we are the one who decide which path and which religion, which denomination we are going to follow.
That's right. And as you said, at the end of the day, we must know that our hope must be in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Sure.
If, for example, if we lose hope in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and there have been so many cases during the history, the authentic cases, for example, showing that they were born in corrupted family, but they were changed to good people at the end of the day.
Exactly.
And vice versa.
Exactly, vice versa. Yes. No son is the best example.
Yes, yes.
So, as I mentioned again, I repeat, all these elements play a role, but to some extent. Mm. They are not the full story. Some percentage, which is different from one person to another, is given to our free will, our choice. And that is why even if we are following our parents for following the religion of Islam, this is not accepted as well. Because when it comes to the principle of faith, the main fundamental beliefs, each and every person should think about their religion and about their fundamental beliefs. And you cannot claim that I'm Muslim because my parents were Muslim. Mm-hmm. No, you should think, and this is mentioned in the books of Islamic law by the scholars, that taqlid, following, is only permissible in Islamic laws, in jurisprudence. When it comes to aqa'id, the main fundamental theological beliefs, then each and every person should think himself or herself to find the true path.
That's right.
Again, I repeat that for those people who may suffer from a kind of despair, they can read the stories of the people who were born into the same family with the same conditions and situation, but then they decided, they chose to be different. I mean, conversion is happening on a daily basis. Conversion means that these people have been living in a very different way. They're, in the majority of the cases, the parents are following one religion, the children is going to convert to another
yes.
religion.
Okay.
And in that neighborhood, maybe the majority of the people are following that religion of his or her parents. All the people in the schools, in the office, the colleagues, the whole environment is following one religion, and this person decides to change and convert. So I believe that this experience in and of itself, the experience of conversions, is telling us that at least a percentage should be given to free will, and it seems that all the people have a kind of free will, and no one that can claim that I was forced to follow this or that path.
That's right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Karimi, for a nice elaboration regarding this topic. It was very kind of you, brother. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Inna fi al-jannati nahran min laban li aliyin wa husayni wa hasan. Li aliyin wa husayni wa hasan. Inna fi al-jannati nahran min laban. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
With our blood and with our lives, we support you, O Al-Aqsa. This was the chant that rang high in the streets of the Yemeni capital, where tens of thousands of Yemenis came out to express solidarity for the latest Palestinian offensive against Israel.
Today, Sana'a came out to say we are with Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, which will wash away all the oppressors and all of those normalizing ties and selling out Palestine. Today, Sana'a is letting the Palestinians know that we are with you and that this operation will lead to the end of all oppressors worldwide.
Ansarullah officials at the rally congratulated what they called an unprecedented Palestinian attack that exposed just how weak the Israeli regime is. Muhammad Ali al-Houthi, a prominent Ansarullah official, believes power is the only initiative Israel will respect.
The only initiative respected by the illegal occupiers is the kind of power that was demonstrated by the great fighters from the Palestinian resistance groups. Their heroic and iconic actions will be recorded in the books of history and will never be forgotten by the enemy and will never be forgotten by the Muslim world.
It is an Islamic obligation to stand with the Palestinians and to stand against our enemies and to stand against America and Israel. The conflict for us is a matter of central and fundamental Islamic duties. By the will of Allah, victory is near.
The demonstration also condemned some of the Arab regimes who have normalized ties with Israel, declaring those who engage in such political efforts as traitors to Islam. Following the surprise offensive against Israel, senior Hamas military commander has called on all Islamic resistance movements in the region, including Lebanon's Hezbollah and Yemen's Ansar Allah movement, to unite efforts to liberate Palestine today, not tomorrow. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
The 5th International and 13th National Iranian Biotechnology Congress has kicked off in the capital, Tehran. The inauguration ceremony of this scientific event was held at the International Conference Center of Shahid Beheshti University. The Congress is the most important gathering of Iranian biotechnology specialists and will run until October 10th.
This conference is aimed at recognizing scientific and technological achievements in the fields of genetic engineering and biotechnology. Hundreds of scientists, researchers, and even students have participated in this event. Nearly 600 articles were presented to the conference.
The Congress aims to provide an innovative and comprehensive overview of the latest developments in different fields of biotechnology, such as pharmaceuticals and nanotechnology.
Regarding the Congress, we have been working so hard to organize a conference on mostly scientific and in entrepreneurship. What I can say about the Iranian biotechnology is that the progress has been immense in the past 20 years. We have had a few laws in Iranian parliament that supporting the startups and the high technologies, including the biotechnology, especially in medicine, pharmaceuticals. Iranian progress have been immense. We are exporting our pharmaceuticals to many countries, but the progress has not been limited on pharmaceuticals, on kits, on several different aspects.
Biotech products account for nearly one-tenth of Iranian knowledge-based companies' income, as well as 60% of their exports. Currently, about 800 knowledge-based firms are operating in the field of biotechnology in Iran. They have managed to fulfill the country's domestic needs by manufacturing homegrown products and decrease the country's foreign exchange spending.
We are a knowledge-based company that has managed to produce thermocycler machines in Iran for the first time. This machine is used in the quantification of DNA and RNA. This apparatus is used in many Iranian laboratories. It can compete with the foreign models as it is very accurate and has a reasonable price.
We are a knowledge-based company active in the field of diagnostic and extraction kits production. We cooperate with many Iranian companies, labs, and research institutions. In the long term, we want to export our products to the neighboring countries.
Around 30 types of biotech medicines are produced in Iran in addition to kits, vaccines, and blood products. Also, 80% of biotechnology pharmaceutical items are domestically produced.
Iran is an advanced and developed country in biotechnology. It's ranked first in the West Asia and 12th in the world. And by supporting knowledge-based companies and academics, the country seeks to improve its global position in this field. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
Hundreds
Hundreds of people have taken to the streets of the Pakistani capital Islamabad to express their support for Palestinian people and to condemn the Israeli regime's atrocities against Palestinians. Chanting slogans against the U.S. and Israel, the demonstrators called on the Western nations to stop supporting the Tel Aviv regime and respect the rights of Palestinians.
West has shown their hypocrisy, their dual standards. They again stood up for Israelis. They raised their voice like America and other countries that what has been done by Hamas, that was a brutality. But what has taken place in right now in residential area of Gaza, they are not raising the voice of the Gazans. They are not raising the voice of innocent Palestinians, where many dozens of innocent children and women are killed.
The demonstrators also urged the Muslim world to unite in order to put an end to attacks on Muslims living in Palestine.
All of the governments of the world except Iran and some other governments like Syria and Iraq, all of the other governments are like they're acting as puppet of the U.S. and that's very painful. And obviously, the nation, the people, the Muslim Ummah is standing behind Palestine.
This is the time for the Muslim world to voice its solidarity with Palestinian brothers. We, the Pakistanis, express our support for the Palestinians and call for an immediate end to Israeli violence and oppression.
The Pakistani government has expressed its deep concerns over escalating tensions in the West Asia and expressed its support for Palestinians, calling on Israel to immediately halt its oppression.
Supporters of the Palestinian cause often express a deep commitment to continue their unwavering and unconditional support for the Palestinian liberation movement. They emphasize that the struggle for self-determination and justice for the Palestinian people is central to their advocacy. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Heads of governments were focusing on bringing more countries into the EU during a summit in Spain on Friday. However, millions of citizens across the current 27 member states are being neglected. A debate in the European Parliament has heard.
There are now 900,000 homeless people on any given night in Europe. And it's estimated that up to 125 million people in Europe live in energy poverty.
Apparently, social welfare systems in the EU are broken.
People across Europe are struggling to pay their rents, their mortgages, even the energy to heat their houses. Those losing their jobs are at a serious risk of becoming immediately homeless.
Sanctions against Russia are hurting the EU's economy. This as huge sums are spent on the war in Ukraine. Unlike EU decision makers, it seems a growing number of citizens want peace talks.
The solution is there. The solution is not to rearm Europe.
If France or Belgium had the war and Ukraine had this huge money, are we thinking that they're going to give us this money? I don't believe so.
Meanwhile, the cash keeps flowing out of the EU and into Ukraine. Since things escalated in February last year, the EU has spent 83 billion euro on arming Ukraine, propping up the government in Kiev and housing Ukrainian refugees. Some legislators claim it's a war the EU simply cannot afford or win. The European Central Bank has now increased interest rates 10 times in a row. The strategy, aimed at reducing inflation, is being questioned.
Inflation is the enemy of the poor and those on low incomes. But equally, high interest rates causes recessions, and recessions bring about unemployment.
Analysts point out that those driving the EU's economic and foreign policies are well able to afford the consequences, unlike the average person. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
In Paris, protesters gathered to express their support for Palestine's unprecedented and successful surprise military operation against Israel. By land, air, and sea, and with missiles, drones, and even manned hang gliders, the Palestinian resistance sent illegal settlers fleeing, captured Israeli soldiers, and apprehended Israeli military equipment provoking awe in longtime pro-Palestinian activists.
We're all witnessing incredible actions by the Palestinian armed resistance, who, as far as we know, managed to come out of this huge concentration camp that Gaza is and inflict severe losses to the Israeli soldiers and settlers. We're looking at the news every minute.
The reasons for the offensive seem to be too many to count. This year has already seen a record annual number of West Bank children murdered, Israel wages 10 police raids every day, and Tel Aviv recently approved thousands of more illegal settlements, which one Palestinian official said was a declaration of open war against the Palestinian people. Last year, Israeli murders of West Bank Palestinians reached their highest level since 2005. While Israel's blockade of Gaza since 2007 is routinely labeled a crime against humanity. Israel's horrific crimes against Palestinians go back many, many decades, but so does the collaboration in these crimes by Western governments, who often claim to defend human rights.
Today, we are, of course, going to congratulate the Palestinian resistance and to expose the complicity of our government, to start with the French government, who is never stop collaborating with Israel occupation and colonization, because nobody says it, but it's not two armies, one against the other. It's people that are occupied and people that are occupying.
More protests in support of Palestinians are expected. But in 2014, France infamously became the first country in the world to ban pro-Palestinian demonstrations. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Under a sea of black flags, thousands of Palestinians from the blockaded coastal territory gathered in Gaza City in a rally organized by the Islamic Jihad movement. Men and women from all walks of life came out to take part in the Islamic Jihad's 36th anniversary celebration. The event was a massive display that showed the broad support for the Palestinian resistance movement by people in Gaza. The Islamic Jihad movement was founded by the late Dr. Fathi Shaqaqi, who was inspired by Iran's revolution and the teachings of founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini.
The Zionist enemy must understand that killing our military commanders will not weaken the Islamic Jihad. Our movement is getting stronger and continues to develop its military capabilities to fight the Zionist enemy and liberate our land.
Addressing the masses via satellite transmission, the Islamic Jihad Secretary General Ziad Nakhala called on all Palestinian factions to adhere to resistance, as it is the only way to liberate Palestine. A large poster of the late Iranian commander, Lieutenant General Haj Qasem Soleimani, was on display during the rally. The Islamic Jihad movement has described its relations with the Islamic Republic of Iran as deep-seated and strategic.
Iran unhum. Barakallah fikum.
May Allah's blessings rain upon the Islamic Republic of Iran, whom continues to support the Palestinian resistance against the Israeli occupation. We call on all Arabs and Muslims to condemn normalization with the Zionist enemy and support the Palestinian people.
The Islamic Jihad has a powerful military wing called the Quds Brigades. It fought fierce battles against the Israeli regime since 2007 and has been enhancing its military capabilities.
Over the years, Palestinian resistance factions managed to enhance their military might and reduce their weapons locally. Few days ago, the Islamic Jihad held an impressive military drill, which made us all proud and made the Israeli enemy very uncomfortable.
Islamic Jihad supporters said they want the Israeli regime to know that the Islamic resistance movement is a force to be reckoned with.
As the Islamic Jihad marks the 36th anniversary of its establishment, the movement says it will continue armed resistance against the Israeli regime for the sake of liberating Al-Quds. Ashraf Shannon, Gaza.
Over the past year and a half, the DPRK has launched more missiles than ever before. The U.S. has tried to deter that testing with initiating and expanding more sanctions against Pyongyang. On Wednesday, a key expert on the peninsula's issues told U.S. senators that Washington should now threaten the DPRK with preemptive strikes.
One of the ideas there, and it's a risky one, is declaratory policy, to say that we reserve the right to actually take down a missile if it's headed over Japan or if it's headed towards Hawaii or the west coast of the United States. And that could be a mid-course intercept, or it could be on the launch pad.
As the U.S. and South Korea have boosted military cooperation and weapons deployment, the DPRK has been developing its advanced capabilities, including testing ballistic, cruise, hypersonic, and submarine-launched missiles. Activists say the threat of preemptive attack will not deter Pyongyang.
The U.S. threat of a preemptive strike against North Korea does not dissuade North Korea from developing nuclear weapons. But rather, paradoxically, this has been a factor that further encourages North Korea's nuclear development.
Activists suggest that suspending sanctions and negotiating with North Korea is the only way to reduce tensions on the Korean Peninsula. While the U.S. seems intent on restraining the DPRK's missile development by any means, it pursues a different policy towards South Korea. In May of 2021, the U.S. agreed to lift all missile restrictions on South Korea, opening the way for Seoul to potentially produce its own long-range ICBMs. Frank Smith, Seoul.
On my orders, the United States military has begun strikes.
Back on October 7, 2001, the U.S. invaded Afghanistan under the pretext of fighting terrorism and dismantling the Taliban government. The U.S. rained down bombs on Afghan cities and conducted numerous airstrikes, claiming to target terrorist hideouts and Taliban strongholds. But the war brought destruction, death, and displacement to millions of Afghans who suffered from violence, corruption, and instability that followed.
I was in Kabul when the U.S.-led coalition first started its airstrikes and bombardments on our territory. I do remember those painful and tragic days imposed on our poor people. The blind airstrikes were killing and injuring our innocent civilians. Their invasion of our country had no positive achievements, but it did bring violence, conspiracies, divisions, and corruption to our nation.
Some experts also said that the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan was a grave mistake in the first place. They believe the U.S. made a lot of blunders during its invasion of the country that led to its defeat and escape from the region.
Confronting a problem at the international level militarily is a wrong political and legal move. In many cases, the use of force and aggressive measures have not led to a positive result. The U.S. invasion of Afghanistan was one of the same mistakes they made at that time. They had a lot of goals and were making claims, but none of them came true. That's because the U.S. was wrong in its estimation of Afghanistan and its policies toward the country.
After a two-decade occupation of the country, the U.S. Army hastily left Afghanistan in 2021, and the Taliban came to power for a second time. As a result, the country is once again reeling from a humanitarian and economic crisis, while the U.S. and its allies have imposed harsh sanctions on the country. The U.S. invasion of Afghanistan has left the country in a state of devastation and despair. Afghan people hold the U.S. and its Western allies responsible for their plight. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. The surprise Palestinian attack on the Israeli regime the Al-Aqsa Storm has changed equations and shattered Israel's myth of invincibility. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. The Operation Al-Aqsa Storm, launched by the Palestinian resistance group Hamas in the early hours of Saturday, 7th of October 2023, has sent shockwaves across the occupied territories, forcing Zionist settlers to run for their lives. According to Palestinian observers, the surprise military operation has changed the regional equation in favor of the resistance axis and shattered the myth of Israel's invincibility. The Gaza-based Hamas resistance movement launched aerial, sea and ground attacks on the occupied Palestinian territories, including at least 5,000 rockets in the initial phase of the operation. The unprecedented Palestinian operation came in retaliation to the Israeli desecration of the Holy Al-Aqsa Mosque, as well as a series of assaults against women in the Haram al-Sharif compound, the compound of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Late on Saturday, less than 24 hours after the operation was launched, Israeli media confirmed that several Israeli soldiers and settlers were held by Palestinian resistance fighters in the besieged Gaza Strip, including senior members of the Israeli army and Israeli generals. Palestinian fighters and youth liberated several Israeli illegal settlements and seized jeeps, tanks and jet fighters, whilst Israeli settlers were seen running away or hiding in shelters or even in trash containers. Dr. Mohammad Halassa, an expert on Israeli affairs, in a conversation with Press TV, said, "The Al-Aqsa Storm operation took the Israelis by surprise and delivered a real slap in their face. Up until this moment, analysts believe that the Israelis are still under immense shock and cannot contain the situation." Dr. Mohammad Halassa, who has been closely monitoring the developments, said, "This time the Palestinians determined when and how the battle would unfold and take shape, while the Israelis entered an unprecedented state of chaos and panic. If the Israeli regime survives this battle, it will suffer a lot to recover from it and its psychological impact. These operations will for sure have repercussions on the Israeli internal situation and on the Israeli settler community as well. The internal Israeli arena is not the only variable to be affected by the battle." Dr. Halassa said, "The unraveling events will most probably change the equation of balance of power in the Middle East region." Touching on the status quo of the Israeli regime, Dr. Mohammad Halassa said, "The regime fears the expansion of confrontations and attacks on other areas of the occupied Palestinian lands and is living in real nightmare." He also pointed to Israeli fears of the Lebanese Hezbollah resistance movement on its northern borders, especially after the Lebanese resistance hailed the Al-Aqsa Storm operation. Dr. Halassa said, "If Israel decides to escalate, we might witness an intervention from the Lebanese resistance or other resistance factions that support the Palestinian resistance, a scenario that Israel has been discussing for years." The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah on Saturday described the Al-Aqsa Storm as a decisive response to the occupation's persistent crimes and violations of Palestinian rights and said it is closely monitoring developments taking place in occupied Palestine. On Sunday morning, 8th of October, the Hezbollah movement claimed responsibility for attacks on three Israeli military sites. "Under paths to liberate what remains occupied of our Lebanese land and in solidarity with the victorious Palestinian resistance, the struggling and patient Palestinian people," a statement from Hezbollah said. The statement from Hezbollah said, The martyr commander, Hajamat Mogniyo groups and the Islamic resistance attacked on Sunday morning, 8th of October, three Zionist occupation sites in the occupied Shabar farmlands region in Lebanon. The Radar site, the Zabdin site, and the Rawaisat al-Alam site, using a large number of artillery shells and guided missiles, and direct hits were confirmed on all of these sites. Palestinian political commentator and former detainee Ziad Hamouri told Press TV, "The Al-Aqsa storm stands as a bureaucratic and security failure for the Israeli regime and proves that all the regime's institutions suffer a resounding failure, including the Shin Bet and the Mossad." According to Israeli media, the regime is used to intimidating battles and believes it cannot be attacked. However, this illusion was shattered on Saturday, 7th of October. Ziad Hamouri explained that the scenario of being attacked has for long been elaborately discussed in Israeli media and intelligentsia, and over the years, all the emergency and police agencies of the Israeli regime have been trained for it, but they were all taken by surprise. For the first time in occupied Palestine's history, not only did we see the Palestinian young men roaming in the streets of the liberated illegal settlements, but also we witnessed the harsh criticism of Israeli media and commentators against the Israeli regime and all of its institutions. On Saturday, Eli Maron, the former head of the Israeli Navy, appearing on live television, said, "All of Israel is asking itself, where is the Israeli army? Where is the police? And where is the security?" Eli Maron added, "It's a colossal failure. The hierarchies have simply failed with vast consequences." Palestinian political commentator and former detainee Ziad Hamouri told Press TV, "The repercussions of the Al-Quds storm battle exceed those of the 1973 6th of October war," adding that it is not even comparable. "The Al-Aqsa storm battle is a huge multidimensional victory which will impact not only Palestine but the entire region, especially in the light of statements made by some countries and resistance movements across West Asia. It will bring about a new equation and a new order in the region." For years, the Israeli regime committed crimes against innocent Palestinians, demolished and confiscated Palestinian properties and desecrated their sanctities, whilst its allies turned a blind eye to it. Today's battle is a natural response in the face of the Israeli regime's violations and savagery, which was eventually going to take place, according to Palestinian political analyst Anan Najib. Speaking to Press TV from inside the occupied Palestinian territories, Anan Najib said, "Today's events are only the tip of the iceberg. The Palestinian people live under illegal occupation, struggle to stay alive, live daily violence, witness the demolition and confiscation of their homes, death of their relatives due to siege and lack of medicine, and painfully see the hunger spread among their innocent children and the desecration of their sanctities." Anan Najib added, "The battle was well prepared by the Palestinian resistance fighters, and it's now time for the Israeli regime to pay for its inhumanity and tremendous atrocities." Anan Najib also pointed out the significant difference between the Palestinian community and the illegal Israeli settler community, saying it is the key to events unfolding. Najib added, "The Israeli community is made up of illegal settlers, the majority of whom obtain dual citizenship, unlike the Palestinian people, who are indigenous people of this land." The Ahlul Bayt news agency has also covered this story and tells us more. The Al-Aqsa storm operation in Palestine has emerged as a significant event, bringing about a seismic shift in the balance of power in the region. Palestinian observers perceive this operation as a game changer, one that has challenged the perceived invincibility of the Israeli regime and has ignited hope among all Palestinians. The operation, which involved protests and clashes in response to Israeli restrictions on Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, has sparked widespread support and solidarity among Palestinians. The resistance displayed during the operation has shattered the myth of Israel's invincibility and demonstrated the determination of the Palestinian people to stand up against oppression. The Al-Aqsa storm operation has exposed the vulnerabilities of the Israeli regime and highlighted the strength and resilience of the Palestinian resistance. This sentiment is echoed by many Palestinians who believe these events have signaled a turning point in the Palestinian struggle for liberation and freedom. The operation has not only shifted power dynamics, but has also led to a shift in the narrative around the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Palestinians are experiencing a renewed sense of hope and a sense of determination, buoyed by the international support and solidarity that they have received. Despite the heavy-handed response from Israeli security forces, including the use of tear gas and rubber bullets, Palestinians have continued to protest and resist, reinforcing the belief that the resistance axis is gaining strength. While the impact on the ground is undeniable, the operation, the Al-Aqsa Storm, has also had far-reaching effects in the realm of public opinion. Many Palestinians are feeling a renewed sense of unity and empowerment, which may have lasting implications for the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and the dynamics in the region. As the operation unfolds, it remains to be seen how it will shape the future of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and the dynamics in the region. But what is clear, however, is that the Al-Aqsa Storm operation has not only challenged the status quo, but has also ignited a new sense of hope among all Palestinians.
Start. Movement. Speed. Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamidi.
Islamidi.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners, my dear sisters and brothers from every nook and cranny of the world. Welcome back to a new episode of Youth Station. Well, I'm Asma.
And I am Bita here again.
Again, we're in here.
Home sweet home.
Yes, and it's just so wonderful.
It is. Mm-hmm. And I'm really glad to see you here again with
Staying
our dear listeners.
Here, of course. I'm so happy to be here in the studio again with you, of
Thank
course.
You.
And then with the dear listeners, well, there's this thing which is so strange, and most of the time we think of it.
Yeah, you know? What is it?
There's some people in my life that I have been knowing for many years.
Yeah.
The thing is that you can see the changes that has happened to them in retrospect if you just go through their lives in a very short time.
Yeah.
You would see that, okay, there has been many changes, but according to me, I would say that the basic features are just going to sit untouched in their personality.
You know, the philosophy of change in something like that is really related to ethics. And when there is ethics here, it means that you can change, mm-hmm. that there is something that we call ethics, okay?
Okay, let me just put it another way.
Yeah.
Do you believe that there are some certain features that you get through your genes that are there
yes.
in your personality and in your character?
Yes, they are.
So,
unfortunately, they are.
Yeah.
You know, but it's all about the potential. It's not about the thing you are.
Yeah.
It is the thing that you can be.
And now you're talking.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. I do believe in that as well.
But the genes are not everything, you know, because there are some people that are excusing and justifying everything by their genes. And, mm-hmm. you know, they're like, okay, if I'm lying, it's a part of me. I cannot change
yeah.
it. It's unavoidable. No, these are excuses. And, you know, but there is this kind of tendency, this stronger tendency in some other people that they may lie more. And there may be some genetic reasons behind that.
Well, you know what? When my friends tell me that, okay, that person is a good person, but We have to work on them to change them. You know, there are some people who think that they can play the prophet
things
and then change other people.
You know, the problem is that we think changing is impossible, but changing someone is somehow impossible. You know, I mean that you can change yourself, but it cannot change someone else.
That's very true.
And sometimes there is this hope, I don't know whether you see it in couples, in some people that love each other. And
even,
they fell
friends.
In love.
Even friends,
that they think, okay, I'm going to change. It doesn't matter that if you are like this, if you have this behavior, this and that, and I'm going to tell you you cannot change these people unless they want to change.
Now, this is the difference.
Yeah.
The difference between when I say I'm going to change someone and when I want to change myself is the desire to change.
Yeah,
when
exactly.
you wish to change, the sheer thing of wishing, the sheer fact that you wish to change is going to do the entire trick for you.
Yeah. I do agree with that. And there are times, I think, in everybody's life that you want to change. After, I don't know, kind of big problem, big situation in your life, like losing someone.
Exactly.
You know, death, I think, is one of the reminders, one of the biggest reminders of everybody's life, that you feel like I have to change.
Exactly.
I don't have enough time. You know, this reminder is one of the things that we force changing. And the thing I'm going to tell you is that you are not a reminder, which is enough for somebody to be changed. Just keep that in mind. You know, we cannot stop someone from smoking if that person doesn't want to.
They say you cannot wake up a person who is just pretending to be asleep.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Yes, well, this is Youth Station, and we're talking about, can I change myself or no, or just, can people change?
Yeah.
Well, there is this proverb that says, a fool at 40 is a fool forever.
Yeah, I wanted to mention this
age range. I usually say there is something in that code.
There is.
Yeah.
And you say, like, older people have a kind of guard and against everything, every change.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if this change is in themselves or other than themselves.
Into the good or into the bad, for whatever.
They don't care. They don't want to change. And I think it's a part of human beings that when they get a kind of special age, it can be 40, it can be 35, you know, around this 40 age, you're going to actually, I think, achieve a kind of maturity, that this maturity will make you proud of yourself.
Yeah.
And this pride is the main and underlying reason that you're not going to change easily. And this is a problem, I think. I mean, this is not something good, that people think that they are perfect, they're amazing, they lived 40 years and they know everything right now. And, you know, I see that in my older generation.
Well, because psychologically speaking, you can change at a younger age. As in, for example, like you are a person who is used to biting your nails.
Yeah.
So changing that habit when you are at the age of 10 or 15 is pretty much easier than changing that at the age of 30 or 40.
Yeah.
You get the difference?
Yeah, you know, there is logical reasoning behind that. When you are getting used to doing something for a longer time, it's more difficult to just, you
exactly.
know, not doing
it.
Exactly.
As in, we
anymore.
Have it in our Islamic heritage.
Yeah.
And we have some narrations that say, a child is just like a canvas. Whatever you write on it, you can never change it ever again.
Exactly.
So be careful about the things you write in the a clean canvas of your children.
And we have another hadith that you actually reminded me. A teenager's heart is like an empty earth that accepts whatever is thrown into it.
Exactly.
Therefore, I hasten to discipline and train you before your heart hardens and your wisdom gets busy. This is what Imam Ali, peace be upon him, told his noble son, Imam Hassan, peace be upon
him. So all we mean to say is that just watch yourself carefully, your behavior and your attitude, and try to change the bad parts and the bad habits as soon as possible, because the older you get, the more impossible it's going to turn to just change.
This term of, you know, hardening heart is so touching, you know?
Exactly,
your heart is going to get hardened. And you cannot do anything about it because it's kind of, you know, I think side effect of time, side effect of habits, addiction, whatever you call it.
Exactly.
So you have to put a lot of effort when you're young, and especially this is youth station, you know, most of the listeners
are
from the youth generation. And because of that, this is the golden time. We call it the golden time for saving your life, your whole
life. I just remembered
life.
Something.
Yeah.
Just as we were talking about the thing that change in the old age is going to be sort of impossible, I just remember that, no, it's not a rule. You know, it's a general state that we just mention it. But then if a person at the age of 40 wishes to change, as we just said, human beings can do everything with their intention. If they wish to change, they can already bring that change into their personality and character. But then it's going to be more difficult.
You know what? I think the first step for changing yourself, for changing everything, is the acceptance that you have to change something. You need to change something.
That I have a problem that needs to be fixed.
And unfortunately, most of the people are in the state of denial, denying everything, denying whatever they are, denying whatever they do. And this is the main and underlying problem that firstly you have to solve this, then you can go to the next step.
So first of all, you have to be honest with yourself.
Exactly.
Accept the wrongness of your character and personality, and then try to change it. I mean, the next step is to just have the intention for the change. I see something wrong in me, and then I wish from the depth of my heart that I can just change it.
Yeah. And this wish is not enough, actually. I want to add this bitter fact that you have to do something about it.
Yeah.
And
practice.
You know, one of my methods that I want to mention here is that you have to make a routine.
If you promise that you're not going to do a sin
for
40 days, then after that 40 days, Allah himself is going to protect you from that sin. He's going to actually be your supporter and your help.
Yeah. So, speaking of all this, I think we have to go for a break.
Yeah, and just like always.
Be the change you want to see in the world. I think it's a kind of thousand times, like we're talking about this code.
It's your motto.
Exactly. In different episodes. But again, it's something.
But it's very nice. It's the same as the code that we have it from Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Yeah.
Just whatever you wish for yourself, wish it for every other person in this world.
Yeah.
That means I would never want anything evil for other people. And I would try to change myself into a better person.
Exactly. And, you know, you're a part of a whole thing. Okay.
Yeah.
So if you believe that you're valuable, you're going to believe that if you change yourself, you're going to change your surroundings. Mm-hmm. You're going to change the world. And this is that butterfly effect, that if a butterfly somewhere, then it's going to be a storm
dominoes
somewhere else.
Effect. Yeah,
exactly. So it's not that tense. I mean, it's not like if you are a good person and you're trying to be good, it means that everybody in this world is getting good. No, it's not like that. But at least you are making your life. You are doing something.
Let's just give you the headlines.
Yeah.
We were talking about the changes. Is it possible for us to change after so long of years and lifetime? The answer is yes. But the condition is the intention and the wishing, the strong passion to change. I must have it in order to change, because without that, I'm not going to change. And then the intention and the passion and the wish for change is not enough. You have to practice. You have to gain knowledge. I don't know, go meet a mentor, talk to a person who's going to shake some sense into your head or anything. But then you just have to gain knowledge in order to practice the change that you wish to happen in your character and in your personality.
And another headline I think we discussed, which was important, was about your genetics, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it is true that
it
we
is
have
true.
A kind of special nature.
Yeah.
And this is a potential in everybody that, it, you know, varies from one individual to
which
another.
Which means you can fight it.
Exactly. Which means it's all up to you, up to your will and whatever your choices are. So you cannot blame your I don't know, genetics or something like that for the mistakes you're making.
You can't actually blame your ancestors for who you are.
Exactly.
Because you have the will, you have the power of will to change yourself.
And it is the meaning of being a human.
Exactly, yeah. But then also we have to mention that there are some conditions in life that you would change inevitably, that you would change as if it has been imposed on you to change.
Yeah.
Like just the thing that you talked about, death is a great changer.
Yeah, it is.
Catastrophes will change you. The problems that might happen into your education might change you. Meeting some people might change you. Exactly, some special disease. So be careful about your friends. I suppose this is very important as well.
Yeah, your surroundings.
The people that are going to be your alter egos would create your personality, part of your personality at least, let's say. Because there is a code that says, tell me who your friend is and then I'll tell you who you are.
Exactly.
So if you see some bad features in your friends, try to be careful about that. Maybe you have it as well because you are acquainting that because you have been with those people all the time.
There may be some situations that you cannot resist this change. You cannot change the change, okay?
Yeah.
And even sometimes you cannot control it.
Yeah.
The thing which matters here is that you know how you are changing and you know the reason of your change. And then you can actually have the line and the path of your change towards something good, to achieve your goal. And that's all it is. It's all up to you and your will. You are a powerful human being and you choose what to be.
You have brain and you can practice everything good. You have gained knowledge and you can have the will to change and bring the change to the world.
Exactly. So I think it was all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We had. Thank you, dear listeners, for listening to us. I wish you change in a way that you do yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And most importantly, Allah Almighty will have his eyes on you in all these paths of changing.
And I, on my side, I have to have a wish. Well, and that wish is going to be, I wish you have a young heart forever.
That was really beautiful.
Yes, because, you know, when you lose that sense of being young, it's a sad thing that might happen to human beings. When you lose your passion for life, it might be so sad. So it is one of the changes that I would love to create in myself, to not to stick to an idea and try to change myself for the better.
That was really beautiful. Thank you for mentioning that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I bid you farewell.
Yeah.
And assalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.